What are we doing this morning? It's Tuesday. Our good friend Tim Mayer joins us on the telephone. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I am fine. How are you?
I was just trying to think of what title I could give you. Commentator
emeritus.
There we go. Councilman emeritus.
Statesman emeritus.
Statesman. Well, he's still a statesman, isn't he? Well, we thank you for joining us. What's going on? How have you been?
I've been fine. Yeah, life is treating me pretty well right now.
Thought you maybe you might have checked out for warmer climes this time of year, but it's good to have you with us and around. And a busy time here in our city. We always check in with you to kind of get a perspective look at it. Do you remember, is it always this busy in the last couple weeks of December with all the stuff that's going on?
Oh, typically it gets a little busier just because of, end of the year wrap-up stuff for the council, city council, and county council for that matter, but... the city council has to basically reconcile the books, transfer money where it's needed in the budget and that sort of thing. So it does get a little busier, but this year is, I think, exceptional because of the growth policies plan, comprehensive plan is underway, and that's moving forward and not as fast as some want and too fast for some others. So, that's an added burden.
It is. And help us understand it, because this is exactly why we want to have you on the air. You have the Comprehensive Master Plan and the updated Unified Development Ordinance. One is for an extended period of time. Help me decipher between the two.
Well, City Council and the City Plan Commission. The City Plan Commission has passed it on to the City Council, but that is called the Unified Development. No, I'm sorry. That is called the Comprehensive Plan 2040, and that's what they are currently City Council is currently working on. Those are the Tuesday sessions that they hold, and basically that is a document that is a vision for the future of the city. It's not really a law. It is more of a document that you would go to and look to see where the general consensus was for development within the community. The Unified Development Ordinance is the actual underpinning, the code that directs development within the community or controls development within the community in terms of height, density, where you can build commercial as opposed to where you could build residential, that sort of thing.
Now, the Comprehensive Master Plan 2040 and then the Unified, how often is the Unified Development Ordinance updated?
Those work in tandem. So typically what happens is you would look at your growth policies plan first. You would get that vision in place, and then you would come back, and then you would do the Unified Development Ordinance after you have gone through the process of updating your growth policies plan.
Tim, does one of those trump the other one of those?
Well, that's a little hard to say, because
I would think the ordinance would trump the guidance.
The ordinance is the law that allows you to do or not do certain things when it comes to development. So I think it's a little more complex this time, because in the past growth policy plans, those have been more vision documents and specifically relating to development and the impacts of development. I think what's currently underway now with what they're calling the Comprehensive Plan 2040 is greater than just being a visionary document. It really, the way it's currently being looked at is pretty specific. So it's not a view from 10,000 feet, it's a view on the ground.
When you're looking that far into the future, can you be that specific?
Well, for me, that's part of the problem, I think. I think I mentioned this in a previous comment, that they're putting too fine an edge on, on some of this. It doesn't allow for very much flexibility. So, and so, you know, things change. I was just kind of looking at the HT before I called, and, you know, some of the comments made last night in last night's meeting regarding the controlling the building height and density in the downtown until the UDO goes into effect, you know, that, you know, things change in terms of how people look at housing, how development occurs within a community, you know, stylistic changes, those sorts of things. Those always come into play, but if you ratchet things down very tightly, then you don't allow for that kind of creativity to work into it. And it's also tied into things like, you know, where the economy is at a given time, interest rates that are, you know, available to borrow money to build things, and, you know, it just goes on and on and on. It's not a very simple problem to address, I don't think.
So. Tim, Brad Whistler characterized some of what was being talked about last night as a kind of let's make a deal. Does this final thing have, okay, we'll trade you that permit for so many low-income housing aspects of what you're trying to do? Is that a part of this? Should that be a part of it?
Well, let me rephrase that, or let me look at it a little differently. I guess what I would say is that once that that document, the growth policy plan document component, is in place and the UDO is finalized, unified development order is finalized, then it should be very close to a situation where a developer can come in and say, you know, I have checked every one of these boxes, and therefore I can build this project by right. And so you eliminate.
And tell me what by right means, Tim. I think that phrase is being thrown around a lot. I'm not sure if everybody knows what that exactly means.
Well, it means exactly what it says, okay, if you think about it. And what that means is that, as I said just a second ago, if you have criteria in place, which is the ordinances that that the City Plan Commission and the City Council and the mayor signs off on. Once that unified development ordinance is in place, if the developer has a lot in a particular zone that allows for a particular use, and that developer can meet every one of the criteria that they talk about in terms of height, density, setbacks from property line, you know, putting a sidewalk in front,
parking
spaces behind, you know, if they can check off every one of those boxes, they literally can get a building permit with a signature, basically. If they want to vary from that, that's when the discussion opens up, and then you start to talk about, you know, what color you paint the building and how many people can live there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So
that shouldn't that, then I would just think from hearing what you just said, that shouldn't that alleviate any of Brad Whistler's concerns about this trade for this and trade for that? If you do it by right, it's there, right?
That is correct. That is correct. But the problem with that is that the problem with build by right is that you kind of, first of all, the people who write the ordinance have a particular bent, so they may like pink buildings. And so they put in that unified development ordinance that, you know, they would be in favor of pink buildings, or that's a hurdle that you can jump and move your project forward. If somebody comes in and says, well, we want to build a green building in a pink building zone, then that opens the door for that discussion to occur. So in a way, what it does is it does kind of stifle some of the creativity and that sort of thing that can occur. So. You know, I think it's really, from my perspective, I think it's really important to have a set of criteria in place that people can work around. And predictability, I think, is probably, you know, that's another word that's being thrown around a lot. And I think people look at that word differently from where you stand. But I think if a developer knows that if they can check off the items on the box that have been decided by the community and its discussions, and then going through the Plan Commission, City Council, and being signed off by the mayor. I think that if you can attain that goal, you'll make it a lot easier for a lot of people. So,
I got a philosophical question for you.
Okay.
Bloomington has, it seems, in the downtown area, and I'll get to the neighborhood question here in a second, but do we want it to be so parsnickety because we have so few options where we want to get the option perfectly right? Is that part of this? Because we're in a high demand, highfalutin, rootin' and tootin'. We're right next to the university. We're doing this is great, and this is great, and we're popular, and we got jobs. Shouldn't we be able to have a very nitpicky way of doing this?
Well, I think you can. You can do that. And I think, but you know, what enters into the picture is that the land in Bloomington is extremely expensive now because of the very conditions you just talked about. So it kind of begs the question, if you're really looking for affordability, which is another issue that people are talking about continuously, if you're looking for affordability, then that kind of encourages you to build denser so that you have more and less space.
Can't have it both ways, can you?
Well, you can if you go up, and that's,
if we've just shrank up.
Exactly.
We've put a ceiling on our roof.
Well, let us hope that this is temporary. So.
We're exactly right. And then the other question is the neighborhood surrounding. Some are obviously have gone through the historic designation. Some have not. We've seen plans for 3rd Street to Grant between the police station and Restaurant Row about those houses or buildings or whatever they are being put down and things going up in those spots. I'm trying to figure out the balance in all this because I know people in Prospect Hill don't want to say someone buys up 3 houses, knocks them all down, puts something else up there.
Right.
Who's going to decide? Is this going to come to what kind of referendum does this come down to? Is this your local council member going to bat here? Is who's going to eventually decide all this, and who do you need to talk to if you have an issue?
Well, I think that's the reason why communities go through a planning process such as the comprehensive plan 2040. That's why they do that. So that, you know, there is at least some understanding within the community that in this area you will allow multifamily to occur. In this area, you'll limit it to, smaller single-family residences, that sort of thing, as opposed to, you know, large built-out development, high-rise buildings. So that's why you go through that process, so you have that predictability. And where the rub comes in is that somebody comes in and has a better idea.
Or technology changes, or the land, like you mentioned, the economy changes.
Well, that's true.
You have to have all that balance and flexibility in there. Something that this program does not have is any flexibility. That's for
of course.
That's Keith and I are not at all doing any of that. So the bridge for a year is just a holding off process to make sure that nothing gets through the cracks or nothing too extreme gets in till this big plan is done. Is that how I should look at this?
Well, I think when I stepped away from council, I kind of stepped away from reading about this stuff. So,
your honesty
was
is refreshing.
Better for my health. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So I think basically the way I understand what occurred last night is that the City Plan Commission said yes, that we should limit the height and density of projects in the downtown area, in the high growth area, for a year, so that people can get through the growth policy plan and get the UDO amended and approved. So basically, once that unifying document, the growth policy plan document, has been accepted by the city council, and the mayor signs off on it. That kind of gives you the vision going forward. And then the planning staff will come back in, look at the unified development ordinance, and say, okay, what our growth policies plan is calling for this in this particular area, and so we'll write our code now to reflect that vision that we have put forward. So once that's in place, then developer A can come forward and say, well, now I can look at this parcel plan and go forward and build, a four-story building or five-story building, depending on what that code will allow for. And again, that comes down to the build by right situation. But the problem that you'll always encounter is that these are very complex projects. It's not just, put up a building and put up the for rent sign. So, there may be an alley that has to be vacated. There may be utilities that have to be relocated because where the utilities were, that sort of thing. So. And again, then you have the changing vision of people of how they want to see things. So,
and Tim, let me take you on that, because back to something you said at the very beginning of all this, 2040, in reality, you've been around the politics of all of this. When they come up with this, whatever we're going to call it, locked in stone, chipped in stone, reality, how long before someone says, oh, no, we can't do it that way, we've got to change it?
Oh, probably the minute you sign off on the document.
Bingo. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not something for all future mankind.
No, and I think what I found fascinating when we, this community, had done both growth policies plan that preceded this one, once it's all settled down and adopted and people and then developers come forward, and they cite, well, look at page 12 right. on this document. It says we can do this X, Y, and Z. And then the public comes forward and says, but on page 14 it says you have to do A, B, and C. And so I looked at page 12 and that's not the way I interpret page 12.
Mm-hmm.
So, these things should be. Have a broad enough vision that people can have a conversation over it, as opposed to, at least this is my from my perspective, it should be able to give you enough of a vision to go forward, but leave room for discussion. That's, I guess, how I'd put it.
That's fair. And
yeah.
You better get your shoes on tomorrow, Tim, because I think the county council goes at 5:30 tomorrow. We'll talk about that in 1 second, but... the city's proposed amendments will be heard tomorrow as well at the city council's meeting at 6:30. So if you can split your cells and be in two places at one time, that'd be pretty handy.
Yeah.
I could see why people get a little itchy and scratchy about that, because it's just these are two big deals and they're asking you to be in two places at once. And
well, that's Bloomington.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, and that's what part of makes me itch sometimes in Bloomington, because you've got people banging on pots and pans and telling me how important this is, and then we can't – we've got 365 days in the year, and we're going to put two big important deals on one day.
Well, yeah, in regards to the city council's work, the city council is doing is ongoing.
Sure.
Although, I'm sorry, what you're talking about is the temporary work on the Unified Development Ordinance. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, city council, yes. So there are two big issues, same evening. That is correct. Yep.
And then I believe the county council's special session is tomorrow night at 5:30. Is that correct?
I don't want to be quoted on the time, but...
I'm pretty sure it's 5:30 in the Nat U Hill building. Marty Hawk will join us tomorrow morning to get us ready for that deal. So
yeah, they'll be talking about the food and beverage tax.
And perhaps even voting on it, and they're taking
yep.
public comment. So two big issues in an hour from each other. That's stuff there going on. Give me your thoughts. What are we going to hear tomorrow night from the county council? Do you think they move on it, or do you think they table it till next year?
Boy, I'd don't have a sense of that at all.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I figure you're out and about in the town and hearing what folks think. Yeah. They want to get this moving. They want to get it grooving.
Sue and I did attend the first meeting, found it pretty interesting. You know, I thought the proponents had made a pretty good presentation, and then I unfortunately couldn't stay around for the public comment part of it, but I understand that from talking with people afterwards that the majority of people, not a grand majority, but a majority of people seem to be in favor of going forward with the 1% tax. So
let me ask you a theoretical question, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. Tim Mayer is our guest, former city councilman, statesman emeritus, joining us this morning. The story we heard last week about Representative Jeff Ellington going to the state saying, hey, let's raise the innkeeper's tax from this to that. If the county council goes ahead and puts the food and beverage tax in, do you think that continues to go forward? Are we just going to get these all lined up in ways, or do you pull that off the table? Give me your thoughts on that. I'm not saying you have to make Jeff's decision for him, but what I think everybody's worried about is all this is going to pass. Now we're going to have all these extra things on the table. Is that what we need, want? Go ahead with your thoughts.
Well, I don't know how... Representative Ellington's proposal has any legs. It would have to get through a committee situation in the State House before it would ever come to the floor for discussion and all that. So I'm not sure where that goes.
Could you argue the annexation had to do the same thing and that wasn't a huge problem?
No, I'm sorry, say that again.
The annexation, didn't that have to go through a similar route and that got to where it needed to get to?
Well, that is true. Yeah, that is true.
So that's why I found it interesting that the process
could... I just run into a few people who are really concerned about the increasing the innkeeper's tax. They just feel that that's going in the wrong direction. So the 1% food and beverage tax, you know, I just don't see that as being a very onerous situation, really. I mean, you're talking a dollar on $100, so it's...
And the other argument was if a hotel room's $100, it's $5 on $100. So there's
right.
we're arguing about one more dollar here and there until we get to a lot more dollars. And
that's right.
And everything else. I kind of see it from both sides. You almost want to take a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B, a little bit from column C. But I don't know how all this works. This is why we talk to you about such important things like that.
I wish I had great insight, but I don't.
Well, and it just seems like. Why does it have to be one or the other? Can it be from multiple sources, or is that just too complicated?
No, I don't think it would be too complicated, but necessarily. But I think the way the proponents of the food and beverage tax have positioned this is that it isn't a big drain on anybody's particular pocketbook, really. It is a fairly small tax. As I said, if you spend $100, it's $1. So, you know, once you get to that level, that wouldn't affect my wallet, I don't think. So,
Tim, let me ask you a question. There have been some people that have said, if this was viable, forget the taxes and all the other things. If this was viable, a private developer would come in and do it because they would make money doing it. You don't need the tax to do that. Do you have any knowledge of any place where there is a convention center that was privately developed?
No, I don't have any knowledge of that. What the consultant to the convention center talked about at the last meeting of the county council, the work session, was that it's anticipated that there will be some deficit in operating a convention center.
Right.
It's pretty much the norm, but that is anticipated, and you factor that into your budgeting. So,
but if Bloomington's such a great place to visit, why not a private developer say, "Hey, people will come there. Let me put this in there. I can make a buck off it."
No, I understand what you're saying. I just don't think that model probably works because if a municipality or a governing body authorizes a situation like this and anticipates that there will be a deficit, the premise is that it's good for the overall economy. Mm-hmm. And
so government never goes out of business.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to sit there empty. It's not going to sit there vacated. The other interesting thing about this development will be, what are they going to do if this all goes through? What are they going to do with the old convention center? Because it's surely not going to match up with the new convention center. There's a cost analysis that probably needs to be addressed at some point.
I don't see that as a problem at all. You would design the new sections of the facility to either complement or reflect the past, and I could see that working very well. It happens all the time. So
if you're surrounding it with shiny new stuff, you're going to have to upkeep and update the.
Well, they probably would renovate especially the upstairs section.
Absolutely right.
Of the convention center, the lobby and all has been all remodeled in recent time, and it's pretty striking now. So, I could foresee that the upstairs facility would be renovated and then go along with the new addition to it if it does come to be. So, one of the things that Bloomington has and Monroe County has to their advantages. In the past, you have seen communities that are, for a better term, lack of a better term, down on their luck, and they figure if they build a convention center, people will come. Well, that clearly does not work. But Bloomington is a community that people do want to come to, and we do have that opportunity. So you're building from a position of strength as opposed to a position of weakness, trying to become strong. And, I think that's where Bloomington has the advantage. If the decision is to go forward with the food and beverage tax and the expansion of the convention center. So, one of the things over the years, we invested a lot of energy north of 3rd Street in the Walnut College corridor, all the way up to 10th and beyond, actually beyond 10th Street. And one of my concerns, and it's being addressed, and that is everything south of 3rd Street was kind of languishing. So, but we're seeing development going on in that area now, and this would complement it. So I'm pretty excited about the potential for that to happen.
And we'll see what the council does in their meeting tomorrow.
And they have a tough choice to make. It's not fully supported by everybody at this point in time.
Yeah, the county council makes a decision, but the city really has the upper hand because of the population and how that money works itself out. So it's an interesting dynamic. There's no doubt about it.
That is correct. And I think one of the things that people tend to forget is that we're all county citizens,
Yeah.
Most people think, well, I'm in the city of Bloomington. The county doesn't really affect my life. Well, you are a member of the county.
Yeah, and then the other side of that coin is the county citizen that says, well, I'm not in the city of Bloomington, and they've got the hand on where all this is distributed and used. That's the other side of that. So I can see it from both angles there, and that's what makes it fascinating to do so. Hey, thanks for your time. Can we do it again after the new year to see get a little catch-up and see where we are? And even we'll keep an eye on the State House in Indianapolis as well, and we'll throw fastballs and softballs.
Yeah, I think that's going to be firing up pretty soon. So
yep, January 3rd, I believe, gets everybody ready to go up there. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you and
to
yours.
You.
Thanks
yep.
for your time as always, and we'll do it again when we get into January.
Great. Talk to you soon.
Tim Mayer, legislator emeritus.
A conversation with.
There you go. It's good to talk to you old folks that have been around for a while. Give us some perspective and some some insight on everything that's happening. And obviously, Marty Hawk will join us in her normal Wednesday spot tomorrow and give you a boots on the ground look. Tim gives you the 10,000 foot flyover on it. So
we're trying to cover this. Doesn't have a dog in the fight.
We're trying to cover this from all bases.
Right.
And to give you the chance to make your decision.